Previously on Compassion Radio.
The reason why they burnt those tires from vehicles, because they created a wall of dark smoke, because the snipers were there, and so the smoke didn't allow them to
see individuals.
Shoot, yeah, to see individuals and make those shootings.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Wherever Christ is to be found, that is where you'll find Compassion Radio, bringing you the stories of God's people doing God's work, God's way. And today is no exception. Joining us in studio once again is Bram Floria to continue what we got started on yesterday's broadcast.
Hey, Jimmy, we're back for a second day of this special discussion that I had walking the Maidan of Kyiv, Ukraine, with a new special friend of the ministry named Oles. He's the dean of students and a professor at the Ukraine Theological Seminary. His personal experience of doing ministry under fire, literally, is what helped the Christian church unite in the face of incredible opposition and real danger. And it's a painful story for him because friends of his died in the attacks of the snipers that tried to clear out the Maidan during the winter of 2014. It's a powerful story. And to have stepped through that history with somebody who lived it is something I can't even describe. But we'll do our best because this is, after all, an interview program that takes you to the places where God's hand is at work. And it's still at work in the Maidan today. So as we pick up the story, Jim, fill us in on the next section of the trip through Maidan that you're going to highlight now.
Going to kick it off today where you're speaking to Oles about how things were seemingly looking good in the Maidan after the initial clashes. But there was still much uncertainty in the air. And just take note, listening friends, this is not exactly studio broadcast quality you're about to hear, so please do bear with us as we continue with Bram's walking tour on the streets of Kyiv, Ukraine.
So you celebrate New Year. People have a big party. It's just a waiting game, they think. What happened?
Yeah.
And by the way, your wife's prayers got answered that night.
Yeah.
You came home.
Oh, yes. I came in the morning. I came home and it was...
Celebration at your house.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a very precious moment. My mother was there too and they were both speechless.
So you come home, but things did not stay peaceful though forever.
You
what
see,
happened?
Every day there were rumors that that pressure of the threat of cleaning or violence, that threat had been all the way through every day.
Yes.
But people just gathered together and never left. And so after the new year, it just continued and carried on. Then it just became more and more radical because more and more violence took place. This corrupt government would hire criminals for money so that they would just do mess.
No discipline, but lots of thuggery.
Yeah. No, during the peaceful revolution, there were jewelry shops, expensive clothing, banks, etc., etc. Nothing was touched. No window was broken. Everything was restaurants, McDonald's, and so on. Nothing was touched because it was peaceful and we took care of our property, right?
Yes.
So to speak.
No riots.
But the violence came from the part of the corrupted government and hired those bandits or criminals hired for money to create mess and beat people and so on. So it's intensified in 2014, January and especially in February. The Jews have their Wall of Sorrow, so what's the right name?
The Wailing Wall.
The Wailing Wall.
Yes, in Jerusalem.
So I think the Ukrainians now, we have our own Wailing Wall. Here it is. These are the portraits of the volunteers who had been killed. It's called a Heavenly Hundred. The first hundred people who had been killed. Peaceful protesters. The oil industry specialist, economist.
Yes. Is this where they died?
And they all died, especially on this particular street. They were trapped and just killed from those two places.
Snipers on top of the palace there, on top of the hotel here.
Yes, yes, they were shooting them over there. The IT guy, the programmist, a teacher, Valery, an artist, a designer, landscape designer. Like, what? This give you a portrait, a journalist, a student, and so on. So it's called a Heavenly Hundred, the first 100 people who had been killed.
Were they all killed about the same time?
About the same time, except for some, as I mentioned, some people were killed there, and over there there was another barricade, so it started from there. Yeah. One, just some occasional shootings, but the massive shooting took place on this street.
And this was in February of the 14th.
Yes, yes. Political and journalist and...
This wall goes on and on. Each little niche in the wall where the bricks are arranged here is a kind of a creche. So an altar of honor to each of the fallen. And here in the center we have a cross and a clock on the hillside behind it. What is significant about the tablets that are on the display here?
It's an honor to the heroes, to the Heavenly Hundred who gave their lives for us.
What is the general message of this poem on the right panel?
Yeah, so...
I see many question marks in it.
This is a famous song, like a folk song.
Okay.
It can be sang on funeral, right? Because it's very deep. I mean,
the imagery is hard to translate.
I will try to send you on email the translation of it.
That'd be great. I'd love to read
that. Deep. It's really deep stuff. I don't want to really make it shallow. It's very deep. It's like a mother, and there is a lot of mother. So this is, don't cry, mother, don't cry. I will come in spring. I will come back in spring. And this says, "Душу и тіло ми положимо за нашу свободу," like we will lay down our soul and body for our freedom.
And the trisub is at the top, the trident symbol of Ukraine. And you see a scene of protesters flying the Ukrainian flag on top of a pillar or a rubble pile of some sort, maybe tires, if I read that correctly.
Yes,
so this scene, these are actual scenes of the event that are commemorated now in stone.
Please notice that this is not the government, you know.
Right.
It's just people, it's just all volunteers things. It was just spontaneous volunteer honor to those people. And you know, you see... these are from the revolution, what you meant. This is the only weapon they had.
Helmets.
Helmets. Plastic helmets. Plastic. It was very naive. You know, a hockey helmet.
Yeah.
How would it protect from a bullet? Nonsense.
So many things have been won by moral victory, yet there's still a conflict going on. So does this testament, this Wailing Wall of Kiev... Does it give the country the moral fortitude to face the challenges now? Do they come here to remind themselves of what they're up against and why they continue to fight?
It's very symbolic. Of course, there was a lot of mindset war or so-called hybrid war or informational war going on in Ukraine. And so people who were far away from Kiev, they really didn't understand what was going on. And so there was a fight for the brains of people.
Yes.
And so the interest in the purification of nation started to take place after everything happened. I saw people coming to Kiev from all parts of Ukraine. And when they came here to really face, to see with their own eyes the faces of the heroes who laid their lives with their freedom, their eyes were in tears, and it was very obvious that people who never, who had never been to Maidan, they realized the value of it, and it was a purification. Yeah, it's like a holy place.
What do you mean by purification? It's an interesting choice of words in English. You think it actually is cleansing their hearts and telling them the truth that dispelled a lie? What do you mean by that word?
The Soviet Union formed a mentality that you shall not love your nation, you shall love the Soviet Union is your motherland, with the capital in Moscow. And so it's like a virus. It was sick, right? And so when I mentioned purification, it's the point of meeting the truth, of facing the truth, that we had been deceived, that maybe I should care about my nation, maybe I should revise my attitude to my roots, to my culture, and so on. So this is what I mean by purification. And of course, remember that every hour there was prayer, 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 prayer. And one relative of mine, I suddenly saw him here on Maidan during one of those preachings and prayers. And he came to me and said, you know what? I think I'm beginning to understand that Christianity is not in vain.
You're listening to a very unique edition of Compassion Radio today, and I just wanted to cut in here to apologize for the unusual sound quality from the streets of Kyiv, Ukraine. But this is such important material that we wanted to share with you. You can see and read all about this month's important project, which centers on that very part of the world, by visiting our website, CompassionRadio.com, or you can simply give us a call at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Okay, let's get back now to Bram's walking tour at Maidan in Kyiv, Ukraine.
Know, that Amen. It all makes started to make sense to me. So this is part of this deep purification of the whole nation. It's like a Mecca, like for the Muslims. You know, they come, they realize what really happened here. Talking of the prayer Maidan, at one of nights, one lady came and said, "Can I speak with a preacher?" We said, "Well, we don't have preachers, but we are Protestants, we are more like brothers and sisters, but you're welcome to share what you want to share." And so she said, "Well, I've been walking around your tent for 10 days. She was walking by every day. She was a volunteer at a kitchen. Every day she would prepare food every day, right, for the protesters. And so she was helping with the hospital and food. And so she told me that he was hesitating whether she should or shouldn't come to talk about God, because she never went to any church or anything like that. And so I said, "Okay, you can talk to me." And so we started talking, and she was a boss of an organization like utilities.
A large power company.
Yeah, a power company. But she was a volunteer. And so she said, "You know what, it looks like I'm losing my mind. And you are the first person I'm sharing this with. And I have relatives, I have my family, my husband and my kids, but I cannot tell this to them. They wouldn't probably understand what I mean. And something must be wrong with me," and so on. And I asked her, why do you think? And she said, "Well, when I look at those criminals, at those people who give orders to beat these innocent people, to beat kids and just to kill people, I just want to take, what's the English for the instrument you cut trees with?
Axe.
Axe. I just want to, really, I'm tempted to take the axe and go to that parliament and just kill them. Mm. This is the feeling, this is what I'm feeling. For the 10th days."
The rage was building in her.
"Yes, and please help me. I must be crazy. I must be losing my mind." Mm. And I asked, "Well, could you tell more about yourself? What you are doing here, etc." And so I found out that she had been serving and ministering without calling it ministry or right. whatever. She was just volunteer doing what others did, right? For 10 days in a row without any rest. And I told, "Well, I think you are not crazy, you are normal. Any normal person with this pace, with this regime, you know, with this schedule,
would want to take in this X square.
Yes.
And because it's not normal to beat people. This is what's crazy. You cannot beat people. You cannot kill people. This is craziness. And so it's a normal reaction of a normal person. And she started to cry like a baby with tears. She was crying and crying and crying. And she sensed such a relief. And I saw her look, a clean, pure, free, a look of a free person. She became free. And then she was ready to listen to the gospel. Mm. And she prayed for the first time in her life.
It's beautiful.
Yes, in that prayer tent. And so when she left the prayer tent, she left with shining eyes, with a glowing face, with loving heart, loving of her family, of other people. She was not depending on, this revenge. Temptations, and so forth. She was free. And she prayed and she experienced God's presence. She could not explain it, of course, but she experienced God's presence in that prayer tent. And so this is one of the stories that took place during those nights on Maidan.
So you're talking about not just praying for the violence to stop here, but you were actually praying deliverance over people from the same violence that was oppressing them, so they wouldn't fall into the same spiritual trap of hate.
A lot of that, yes. Yes, and this is what our mission, our main mission, to pray and to... peacemaking mission.
Yes.
And deliverance, a lot of deliverance. And some people, some men would come and say, we will start from politics, but continue about family relations. And he would say, please pray for me, for my relations with my wife, because, and so on. And
it's amazing how politics can go on to spiritual things when the time is right and when the pressure is on. These faces, Oles, they're a mix of young, old, people of passion. They're all unique. Every single person, there's not one alike. So they each had a unique story, and they loved their country deeply. While you've been speaking, we've seen a soldier come and touch the face of someone he loved. We've seen a couple of ladies walk along here and see familiar faces, and you see them just crying as they work their way all the way to the top of this hill. And during this conversation for the past hour, we've only made it three quarters of the way through these faces. And now we're getting close to the top of this particular monument to the dead, which, of course, in this case, is a monument to the life of a nation. But I've got to say, Oles, that you are the monument to the life of the kingdom of God, coming to the rescue of a people that was desperate and is desperate. And we're going to keep praying that God uses you to bring not just peace, but transformation and hope and deliverance for those who are so in desperate need of a God who loves them.
Yes. This place is called the October Palace, because of the October Revolution in the Soviet Revolution in last century.
Yes.
And it was a communist place. And this was a KGB place, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the first churches started, they were not church buildings. So where do you have your congregation gathering? And ironically, this old Soviet building became the place where several churches had...
they shared this facility together.
Yeah, in 1990s, when there was a big revival time, a New Life Church was meeting here, and there was a conservatory music place, so many musicians would come. And so it's very interesting. But it's another story. The spiritual revival in Ukraine, it's just a bigger story, bigger picture.
But you really can't separate the stories of suffering and revival, can you?
Yes. See, many Christians were challenged with the fact that people who don't go to church love their nation more. Some believers.
And that kind of shamed them. Now, the thing I did not ask you about the time of the cleaning, when the violence finally descended here and the 100 were murdered along that street, and then other violence came after that. Were you still as active on the square then as you had been earlier, or had you been pulled back to do other ministry work?
Again, I wasn't there every day. I tried to be there at the most important times, at night, especially at nights. They were the most dangerous, actually, times, because you have the minimum amount of people. This is the very place where these people had been killed.
And this is all part of the same action that killed the first one.
Yeah, it's all the action, yeah. It was in the morning when they made a trap. They provoke the activists to come here. They made a provocation and they ran away or something like that. They pretended, right? So it was a trap. And many of them ran or approached this place. And it was just a perfect place.
And snipers were up here somewhere?
For snipers from there and from there, yes.
Would think you would have cover because we see lots of leaf and green around us right now. But, of course, in the midwinter, this would have been bare.
Yeah.
So the sight lines were very easy for them.
Yeah, it was very, yeah. The Lord protected me.
I imagine your wife felt very relieved you were not there those nights. But even in talking with Oleg about not being here during the first wave of the big violence when he was with his wife in Tajikistan, did you feel that God was in it, that you were not here, or did you feel a sense of false guilt for not having been here?
No, not at all.
I know we're ending our journey through most of these memorials. You mentioned when you finally came back to work and had to sit down and do normal things, that you were experiencing and didn't know it at the time, what we would call PTSD. Mm-hmm. And all those that served with you had to go through a long period of decompression, so to speak, mm-hmm. of all of that adrenaline and anger and fear, and that you felt yourself just kind of frozen in shock for a while. What was it that brought you out of that?
I don't think there was any specific event. Just step by step, just doing what you're supposed to do. Sometimes when I walk on the streets of here on Maidan, when I see the faces of those who have been killed, you know, you cannot predict your emotions. Sometimes I just cry and cannot stop tears, but other times I'm fine. I think it's good sharing and realizing that you're not alone,
yes.
That it's not about you. Yeah, really, as soon as you realize it's not about you, it makes it very easy. It's about other people, and there are many involved and many helped, and people really suffered, not you, you know.
Yes.
Others really suffered and they needed much help and so on. So that sort of puts it on the right place, right perspective.
So I get the feeling this will be a very vivid and living memory for a very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very important to understand that trauma, this pain, not necessarily anger. Like, we expect that people should be angry, should be hating, like Russians and so on. But try to find a Ukrainian who hates Russians. It's very hard to do. When you talk to these people, just talk. You may ask any person, do you hate Russians? And say, are you crazy? They don't hate Russians. They're just sorry for what's happening. It's very sad. It's unjust. You know, why do you come to our land to kill our people? What did we do for you? You know, what evil did we do for you? I mean, what for? Why? So it's unjust. So this is what makes people desperate, and it's just sad.
I know we've exhausted you for many stories today.
My brain is not...
You've been very, very good to us, my friend, and thank you so much again for making this possible for us to see and experience this place. As you put it, a holy place for you and your nation. We are grateful for it. Well, friends, that's the journey through the Maidan that I took with Oles, a great friend and a passionate believer and follower of Christ. He mentioned earlier in our discussions how the entire nation of Ukraine is going through what he calls a PTSD, ongoing, unrelenting stress and fear about the future. We really need to continue praying for what's happening there in Ukraine, for the protection of the believers especially, because they're doing frontline work and standing up to some forces that don't want to be messed with. And they really truly believe that God's going to do transformational work, like the project we're sponsoring this month, which Jimmy will tell you a little bit more about. We need to stand behind the believers in Ukraine. So friends, please join me as we continue this work this month.
as a special thank you this month for your support of Compassion Radio and our Christ in the Conflict project, we have a life-changing and highly entertaining movie. For your special gift of $50 or more, we'd love to send you, on DVD or Blu-ray, the powerful and highly successful theatrical release of War Room. This film demonstrates both the spiritual battle that prayer really is and beautifully portrays how God answers the desperate pleas of His children. Order yours today, and thank you so much for standing with us. Reach out to us by phone at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail, we're at Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can always find us online at CompassionRadio.com. On behalf of Bram Floria, Cher Nelson, and the entire Compassion Radio team, I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.